Update on Tuesday night. I'm sitting at home and I'm thinking I have 5 children and they're in 4 different countries right now. So 2 are in America, obviously. Of course, Lowell and Rensselaer, that's 2 different countries, so I don't know. And Ash took a trip to Trinidad. Arranged it with the missionary on Monday. We got tickets. She left Tuesday. And Brett and Jen were in Panama. And, of course, Heidi's in Australia. So, little thing about Brent, and this is what it seems to be, and, of course, time will tell. Both he and Jen feel very strongly about going to Panama. There are 4 Baptist missionaries in the whole country today. 2 are Baptist writers. 1 is a fundamentalist, repeat after me type guy. And the one that is not is the one that Brent wants to work with. And Panama passed a law recently that they want Christianity taught in the public schools. And the pastor that Brent wants to work with wrote some curriculum, and the country adopted his curriculum. So there's a chance of them actually teaching this in the public schools. Plus, it seems that the Panamanian people want to get away from the Catholics and the Charismatics. They see the fallacy of both as a general feeling of people. So it's almost like there's an open door, a complete open door of opportunity in Panama. So keep them in your prayers, if you would, as they try to seek the Lord's will on that. So that's that. In Luke 22 is where we're at. Ash went with a fellow named Hoffmeister, a missionary in Trinidad that's doing a real good job down there. So she went down there for about 8-9 days. So Luke 22 is where we're at, and let's go ahead and pray. Lord, thank you for your words, and Lord, I do ask you to help us understand them, help us know how to apply them, help us to somehow, in some way, to be able to grasp what the great sacrifice you did at Calvary. Somehow help us to try to figure out everything, or at least understand a little bit, and to appreciate the great sacrifice that you've offered to man. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, in Luke 22, we got down to about 54. So we're at Luke 22, 54. And this is written by a physician, a doctor, Luke. Okay, in our culture, we would tend to think medical doctor, but in the other cultures throughout the world, it would more likely be what we call alternative health, okay? And so that would be more likely what Luke was a part of. And he was a man that God wanted to write chronologically from the beginning of John the Baptist all the way through the blindness of Israel in Acts 28. So he is the writer of the Gospel of Luke, according to Luke, and the book of Acts. And so he was one man that traveled with the Apostle Paul throughout all his work. So he laid it out chronologically. And where we're at here is the arrest of Jesus and the denial of him by the Apostle Peter. So we're at verse 54. It says, "Then took they him and led him and brought him into the high priest's house." So this is obviously going to be a pretty elaborate place. "And Peter followed afar off." Okay, this is after they came with him, came to get him in secrecy at Mount of Olives, away from the masses of people. Right before that, Jesus told the apostles to get some swords, and for obvious reasons, for self-defense. And when it came time to supposedly defend themselves, Peter whipped it out and took a swing at a guy. The guy ducked, got caught his ear. Jesus Christ told him, "Put it away, Pete." And then Jesus Christ healed the guy's ear. So, if anything, Peter is not afraid. He's not afraid. So what's his problem? He's probably mad. He's mad at God. Okay, any of us men, if somebody tries to cold cock you, you want to defend yourself, right? And so Peter's wanting to defend himself. And he most definitely wanted to defend Jesus. And when the Lord said, put it away, now what do? Utter helpless. And so you want to do something but can't. And so it seems that Peter's mad. Mad at God. And yes, we do get mad at God. So he's following afar off. Now this story is repeated in all four Gospels. So if you put them all together, you get more of the information. In verse 54, over in the John passage, it says that John knew the high priest personally. So John went right into the house. Peter was hanging at the door. And John whispered to a gal who was watching the door, hey, get Pete in here. Get him in here. And that gal is the one that first said, you're one of his followers. And that's the one that Peter denied him. So Peter followed afar off, verse 54, 55, and when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall, so this is part of the high priest's house or mansion, and were set down together, Pete sat down among them. Okay, the reason why, it was a cool night or a very cool morning, as this was very in the wee early morning hours. So they stoked up some fire as a springtime happening in Israel, in Jerusalem. And so they're trying to stay warm. And Pete was right around there. Peter was right around there. And verse 56, but a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him. Now she noticed she doesn't ask. She makes a statement. How does she know that? Because John the Apostle saw him at the door and said, oh, go get him. He's one of us. So she said, this man was also with him. That's right. He denied him, saying, woman, I know him not. Okay, so he's upset. He's mad. It seems to be that way. And after a little while, another saw him and said, thou art also of them. And Peter said, man, I am not. Okay, man, that's that common, you know, say, man, I am not. No way, Jose. Okay, and so, and about the space of 1 hour after another confidently affirmed, saying, of a truth, this fellow also is with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, man, I know not what thou sayest. Now, here, Luke, he didn't write about all the, the cussing going on. The other guy said he cursed and whatever. Some of them old fishing stories came back. And he let it be known quickly, I am not his. So this is the Apostle Peter. Okay, this man was with Jesus Christ for 3.5 years, straight up, 3.5 years. And when he got in a situation where it caught him off guard, here he denied Jesus Christ 3 times. And who are you and I? Who have never seen Jesus Christ. Okay, so if this man right next to Jesus Christ can get thoughts from Satan, and Jesus Christ rebuked him and said, Satan, get behind me, who are you and I? Where are we at on this thing? Okay, and so any of us are susceptible to these things at any time, and it'll catch you at the time, most of the time, off guard. When you least know it, and unfortunately, a lot of times it'll be right when the kids are right there, and we're all flustered, and then the kids are going to watch us go through a tough time. Okay, and that's just life, and that's how it goes. So the Lord had already told Peter this was going to happen. He didn't believe it. It happened. Okay, and after it happened, now in verse 59, there's a one word at the end of verse 59, which is a very interesting or important word. Okay, Galilean. Galilee is the northern tribes. The two tribes that where the apostles came from was called Naphtali and Zebulun. These are northern tribes. Now, why that is significant is that British Israelites is getting very prevalent in this country. Catholics are British Israelites, JWs are, Mormons are, and of course the Arians are. Okay, and this British Israelism, where God has dumped Israel and shifted it to the white Anglo-Saxon race because the 10 northern tribes migrated from Israel to England, and the throne is never left. You know, England. I mean, that's the jargon. Okay, now these guys may have lost the 10 northern tribes, but God knows right where they're at. And this Galilee was the tribes of the apostles. Peter was of the northern tribes. He is called a Jew. So our British Israelite friends are going to say the 10 northern tribes are Israel, the 2 southern are Jews, they're children of the devil, and the 10 northern are the ones that came to America, and of course that's where all the covenant's gone. No, the 10 northern tribes, God knows right where they're at, even today. He knows where all 12 are at today, and he's going to pull them out when he's ready. So there's a difference between Israel and church, and if a person doesn't get that right, they're going to get all messed up in doctrine. There's some guys bought my reference Bible, and he feels compelled to correct me of all my notes, so he writes me and tells me all this stuff. And he thinks the last days ended in 70 A.D. So we are in the P.S. days? I'm not sure what days we're in. I mean, how goofy can a person be? Okay, but there are a lot of people that believe that. A lot of people. And the reason why is when they start messing with the book, God messes with this. And so that's a scary thing when that happens. So Peter is a Galilean. In Mark 40, verse 70, he is called a Jew. So a Jew, a Hebrew, and an Israelite are all one and the same in the Bible. Okay, the one exception, there's one exception to that, and that's Abraham himself, who was called a Hebrew, but technically he's not called a Jew because it has to be a descendant from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The Apostle Paul himself was called a Hebrew of Hebrews, Philippians 3, an Israelite by himself in Romans 9, and a Jew in Acts 20. So those terms are all synonymous. That's New Testament doctrine, and God has not... He has not completed the 70th week, so God's going to pick up the Jewish remnant when time is ready. So, in verse 60, he says, "Man, I know not what thou sayest." And immediately, while yet spake, the cock crew. And verse 61, "And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter." Eyeball to eyeball. Now, if we had that at all times, I would dare say we would think differently about things. There's one guy who's in a big, tall building, and he's looking out the door, out the window, and he sees this guy who's going to break into this car, and he just yelled, "The Lord's watching you!" And that guy looked around, and he walked off, not breaking in the car. Because the eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. My uncle was a sheriff in Jasper County years ago. And he was always a real cut-up. He was a funny guy. And on a Friday night, somebody got drunk real early, so he stuck him in a drunk tank. So it's like 6 o'clock Friday night. I mean, this guy's in a drunk tank all by himself. And Uncle Carol is just listening to this guy, and this guy's talking to himself. "I need to get right with God. I need to pray." And Uncle Carol gets on the speaker system, and "This is the Lord." The guy's looking at her, sobered up real quickly. I mean, he got an apparition. But Uncle Carol, he just laughed and laughed about that. Now, if we realize that the Lord is seeing us at all moments, and he is right there. I hear Christians pray a lot of times, "Lord, be with me. Lord, be with me." You don't have to pray that. That's an automatic for the New Testament believer. Now, we can lose his influence, and we can grieve him, but we don't have to pray that idea. And so here Peter, after he did this, the Lord and him eyeball to eyeball. And Peter shows true repentance. Peter remembered the word of the Lord. He remembered the word of the Lord. He remembered what Jesus Christ said. And he said, "How that he had said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now, if we all get that relationship with the Lord, nobody will ever have to correct us. The Lord will correct us. And if we keep that tender relationship with our God, then we keep short accounts with Him and recognize that we're going to stand in front of Jesus someday. Peter went out and wept bitterly. He was upset with himself, disappointed with himself, you name it. He had it about himself. And then he had that meeting with the Lord in John chapter 21 where the Lord asked him three times, Pete, do you love me? And he had to say it three times because he denied him three times publicly. He had to confess him three times publicly. And that was taken care of. And then Peter writes about the Lord where he says that charity covereth a multitude of sins. The Lord never brought it up again after that. But I'll bet you Peter thought about it time and time again. And I'll bet you Peter, when he reads this in the Bible, says, oh, was I dumb. Boy, was I. But you see, actually, the Lord said that was going to happen. Not justifying it, but it happened to him. Okay, verse 63. Paragraph mark, so the camera changes off of Peter. And it goes to back to the Lord Jesus. He's got some soldiers around him, Roman soldiers. And it says, and the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face. Why would they do that? It's because you can't see which way the punch is coming. If you could see which way it's coming, you can go with the punch and it not even hardly affect you. But when you can't see it, it's coming. They struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is it that smote thee? He could have answered it, obviously. And many other things blasphemously spake they against him. Now that was one of the warnings that John the Baptist told soldiers like this. In Luke chapter 3, when they came to John the Baptist and said, what do we do? What do we do? And one of the prohibitions to the soldiers was Luke 3:14, and the soldiers likewise demanded of him, saying, and what shall we do? And he said unto them, do violence to no man. Do violence to no man. Neither accuse any falsely, and be content with their wages. But notice that, do violence to no man. I don't understand why guards do this to people. I don't understand why people will tie somebody up and just beat them to a pulp. I don't get the mindset. I don't get why they do that. And many, like a Japanese soldier, what they did some of those people. I don't understand the mindset. But people get under a spirit. And they do these things. Do violence to no man. Now, in 1971, Stanford University wanted to do a psychological study of imprisonment. And so they asked students to volunteer to be prisoners, and they asked them volunteers to be guards. It was a 2-week study. They planned to do 2 weeks of this study, Stanford University. They cut it short after 6 days because of the psychological damage it was causing not only the prisoners, but the guards. The guards became sadistic over the prisoners, and the prisoners was actually 6 days losing their mind. It was a voluntary study, and they stopped after 6 days. And that, unfortunately, is what goes on in prisons. Now, a person has different feelings about prisons, meaning America has the highest per capita prison population in the world. And in the Bible, prisons are meant to be just a very short stay in the Bible. Murderers are obviously put to death. Kidnappers obviously put to death. Molesters put to death. Okay? And Old Testament, sodomy put to death. Okay? All those things. A thief, don't put him in prison. He is to pay back a certain amount back to the one he stole from. Okay, I met a guy down in Rensselaer, got a habitual charge. For what? Now having a little plastic card when he traveled down the road. Put a guy in a cage because he doesn't have a plastic card when he travels down the road. I don't get that. And that's what jails are. It's a cage. They treat animals. If you treat your animal like that, sometimes the Humane Society will knock on your door. Now, again, you know, I'm not justifying, you know, what's going on, but still the idea is that the Bible obviously has the answer for all these things. You're never going to get rid of all crime, never, 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 no matter how good a place is, but they don't have school shootings in Switzerland. Not there, because they got snipers in every house. They don't have school shootings in Israel. Not there, because the teachers are armed. I mean, it's just insane. Can you imagine a ship getting hijacked by a speedboat off the coast of Africa because they can't have a gun on the ship? Who has that kind of a policy? That's just utter insane. Okay, and you see that what's absolutely the policies going on in our country is designed to destroy this country. And it's just an amazing thing. But verse 63, 64, 65, I do not understand what joy a guy gets from smacking somebody around when their hands are tied. Come on, at least make it a fair fight. Untie the guy. Okay, and so this is what they did to the Lord Jesus. Of course, they were fulfilling prophecy. And the words that they were getting in their mind was coming from unclean spirits. And that's what motivated this whole idea. And Jesus Christ was taking all of this for us. Every beating he took, every bit of it was for us. For the world to pardon the sinner. Okay, at verse 66, we got a paragraph mark. And as soon as it was day, okay, so as soon as it was day, so like 6 in the morning, so this is going through the night hours. As soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, Art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I also ask you, ye will not answer me, nor let me go. Now these guys, these chief priests and scribes and elders, are not used to somebody talking back to them. They've got the high ground. I mean, they could yell contempt of court. Okay, and so the Lord just straight up answered them. And then verse 69, this was almost like inciting them. This statement was going to set them off. He says, Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God. And he's gonna. And he did. And boy, that one got him going. Verse 70, then said they all, Art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, Ye say that I am. You said it, pal. And what he's doing is he's citing a verse in Psalms where it says, Ye are gods. This is found other places in the Gospels. And then they said, What need we have any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth. Okay, so there's an admission. So he is the Son of God. Okay, Son of God. Big crime. Ain't that a big crime? Okay, let's say a guy's a nutcase. He's in the court, and a judge says, You the Son of God? Yeah, I certainly am. Does that warrant to put him in a cage? I mean, he's a nutcase. Okay, but in the Lord's case, he's the Son of God. Verse 23. Okay, now we go to the judge in the matter. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation. Where did he come up with that idea? They didn't ask that question in the previous chapter. They were just talking about blasphemy. These guys know what to say to get Pilate involved. We found this fellow perverting the nation. No, you didn't, you liars. You made that up. And forbidding to give tribute to Caesar. You liar, he'd already taken care of that. You're making that up because you know that money talks. And so they're making this stuff up, saying that he himself is Christ the King. Okay, now that's right. They got one out of three right. Then Pilate asked him, saying, Art thou the King of the Jews? And he answered him and said, Thou sayest it. You said it. Again, These guys are not, it is not normal for somebody to talk this way to them. They're used to being coddled, and you got to give in to them, and they've got the gavel, and they can hold you in contempt, and they've got the power over you. And so the Lord just says, thou sayest it. You said it. Then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man. Pilate has seen a criminal. Pilate has watched the reaction. Pilate has seen people intimidated. He has seen criminals lie in front of him. And he looked in the eyes of Jesus Christ and he could see an innocent man. He could tell by his eyes. And he made the statement, I find no fault in him. Okay, now that is a judicial decree by the judge, but he didn't sign the decree. And so because he didn't sign the decree, things change. So he says, I find no fault in this man. And they were the more fierce, saying, he stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. Okay, the they, it's not mentioned here, if you go to the other cross references, the ones who instigated this mob scene will be the high priest and the elders and the Pharisees. And in verse 2, they were the ones perverting the nation. They were the ones causing that, and they charged that to Jesus. And here's a rule of thumb in life. In most cases, Romans chapter 2, verse 1, if somebody charges you with something, accuses you of something, most likely it's because they've done the same thing. Romans 2, verse 1, if a man judges you, thou judgest, doest thou the same thing? That's almost an absolute rule of life. Okay, and so, like the NIV proponents, they say that King James is homosexual, but yet, the NIV people hired a lesbian, a feminist lesbian, to be the English consultant towards the NIV. So here they're charging one thing and doing the same thing. Romans 2, verse 1. Okay, now verse 5, they are instigating the people. So when you get a religious leader to instigate the people, a lot of the people who follow the religious structure will do exactly as told. So that's verse 5. They stirred up the people, teaching throughout all Jerusalem. Okay, they saying he stirreth up the people, but that's what they're doing right now at that time. Verse 6, when Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. So out of his jurisdiction, he said, man, I can get rid of this case. I'm going to move it to a different jurisdiction. It's out of my hand. It's washed. Man, I don't got to deal with it. Boy, that was good news to him. And that's what he thought. Okay, it's like if a judge gets some case and he don't want to deal with it, it'll go to the next, he'll move it to another court. Okay, over in South Bend area, many of you know Bill Day and how quiet and gracious Bill Day is. And he had a case where a judge is supposed to have an oath and bond signed. Okay, so a judge that's elected into office, the first day, the first act, all they have to do is walk across the hall to another judge. The judge swears them in. He signs an oath and a bond. How easy is that? And that's all they got to do. And he checked his judge in his case. She didn't do that. Which means that everything that she does is null and void. She is not a judge. Everything she does. So Bill graciously said, Judge, I'd like to tell you something. Well, just file your papers. Well, I'd just like to tell you personally. Well, just tell it right. Well, you don't have an oath and bonds. So what? That don't matter. And all 8 judges in South Bend didn't have oath and bonds. And Bill checked them all out. That don't matter. The next day she signed her oath and bonds. And legally what happened is she committed a criminal act. But is anybody going to do anything about it? No. Because now she's impersonating an officer when she didn't follow the rules. But you see, what they'll do is they'll just move it from one court to another, to another, to another, to another. And I think Mike Sinicky, his case one time on a traffic issue, went through all 8 judges. And all he did was The statute doesn't say to be it enacted. It has to have that in there, be valid law. And it just went through all eight, and finally the eighth had to deal with them. And that's what Pilate was trying to do. This is a hot potato. I got to get rid of this. And so he pushed it to another judge's jurisdiction, verse 7. And as soon as he knew that he belonged under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see of him a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Now this Herod, now we don't see who this Herod is. We got to envision this. Pilate had a wife, Mrs. Pilate, warned him about. This Herod, what is this guy? Yeah, probably right out of San Francisco. And he's going to be the judge of Jesus Christ. And he's a guy that likes to see something miraculous, but he ain't going to believe it. Hey, man, that's cool, man. That does wonders when you're smoking this weed here. Man, is that far out. And that's what this Herod was hoping to see, some miracle. Not because he wanted to believe in Jesus Christ, he just wanted to see something fantastic. So verse 9, then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. Jesus Christ did not even give this guy a time of day. Can you imagine how flustered this man got?
I'm talking to you.
Looking around, just ignoring the clown. What is the Lord doing? He set his face like a flint to go to Calvary. And he is just letting this go, and he's letting it go. And here's a man that was wanting to see some action. And this is what the Lord does. When a man is just curious about truth, where he's not going to do anything with it, God ignore him. Just flat ignore him. And that's what Jesus Christ did to him. He just ignored this guy. Verse 10, and the chief priests and the scribes stood and vehemently accused him, and Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught, mocked him and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. Made fun of him. Put a purple robe on him, a Roman robe, to sit there and make fun of him. Now, how many people can sit there and take that? Somebody making fun of you, mocking you, punching you a few times here and there, smacking you around, and just stand there and take it. And that's what Jesus Christ did. An interesting statement in verse 12. In the same day, Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for before they were at enmity between themselves. So here we see a political friendship developed because they have a common enemy in Jesus Christ. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of political agreements take place. It's not because they are agreeing about something, it's because they are agreeing on who they hate. And that's a sad thing there. So verse 13, now it's back in Pilate's court. Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and rulers and the people, said unto them, ye have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is done unto him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. Now, why would he have to do that? Why do you get to beat a man? If he's innocent, why doesn't he just walk out? Why do you got to chastise him? Take this whip and just whip him. I don't know if Pilate's thinking, if I bloody this man, maybe the people will back off. To bloody a man means there's going to be a gaper's block. Isn't that what causes traffic stops when there's no accident? People are trying to crook their neck so they can see some blood. And that just kind of incited these people. I mean, Pilate could have gone down in history as a hero to let Jesus Christ go. You say, yeah, but they would have probably, yeah, they would have had somebody in waiting. Somebody in waiting would have been ready to go, a second one, to fulfill what God wanted. But Pilate could have come out of this a lot better than he did, obviously. And nobody names their kids Pilate anymore. Why? Because the name of the wicked shall rot. And so he says, for of necessity he must release one unto them at the feast. And they cried out all at once, saying, away with this man, release unto us Barabbas, who for a certain sedition made in the city and for murder was cast into prison. I thought they said Jesus was perverting the nation. Isn't that what Barabbas was doing? So why are they letting this guy go for sedition and murder when they accused Jesus Christ of perverting the nation and he had no proof of it? This shows the hypocrisy that took place that day. Pilate, therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them, and they cried, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Okay, the people, again, were instigated by the high priest. The high priests were the ones yelling and screaming, getting the people all riled up, and this is becoming a mob scene. Crucify him, crucify him. And he said unto them the third time, why, what evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. Okay, so there's the instigators. The chief priests, top ones. Those are the ones in John 8:44, Jesus Christ said, ye are of your father the devil. Verse 24, and Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. There's a politician. Which way is the wind blowing? Politicians are parasites of the people. Statesmen are servants of the people. And Pilate here is a typical politician. But he's got to go home and listen to his wife, and she warned him about this. And I'm sure they had many a discussion. Verse 25, and he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired, but he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrene, coming out of the country, and on him they laid their cross that they might bear it after Jesus. Okay, now verse 25, I'll come back to that problem. Now, he delivered Jesus to their will. That right there, coupled with Acts 3:14, we'll come to and probably look at both of them next time. There's where the sovereign will of God and the sovereign will of man met together. Now, Calvinists, they just want to talk about the sovereign will of God. But when we have a free will, we have a sovereignty over that free will. Okay, and on that day, God also was determined to have Jesus delivered as the people were determined to have him delivered. And on that day, they both met together. And that was a day the Lord showed his will, but yet at the same time, he showed the will of the people. And it's an amazing thing how that all worked together, just according to God's plan. Where God's will wasn't forced upon the people, they acted of their free will at the same time. And that's kind of hard to reconcile those things. And how does God do that? And it's by the thoughts that he places in their mind, and Satan places these same thoughts in people's minds. They act upon the thought of their free will, thinking it's their thought, where that came from two different sources. It's an amazing thing how God works, just amazing. Okay, that's 26. We'll come back to 25 and then 26 and then follow. Any questions?